Was geht da an? Yesterday's shiur was the end was powerful. We'll see how it plays over the world. But excuse me, I can't hear. I don't know. Not yet. They're the bosses. What do we have? All right. Well, I think we can begin. Let's see. Okay. Today is Monday, the 4th of March, 2013. And once again, I want to say hello to my wonderful students in front of me and to those listening across the big world. It's hard for me to leave everything we did yesterday. Yesterday was an important shiur. But today we're in a different world, and perhaps there is a very strong connection between whom we're talking about today and all that we said yesterday. Bernard Revel did a lot of great, accomplished many great achievements. And we spoke, you know, Talmudical Academy and reorganization of REITs. And we're certainly going to go in, if not today, in the future, Yeshiva College. And these were epic-making events. But in my humble opinion, the most important concept that Rabbi Revel brought to America was that American kids are not second-rate. Their minds are as good as any European kid. And we need great Rashi Yeshiva. And Rabbi Revel from Tulsa, I mean, you can check in Bernard Revel, Blood of American Jewish Orthodoxy, you can check the sources from Tulsa, kept on pleading with the heads of the yeshiva, bring the Meitzer Te'ilui to America. And September 1st, September 1st, 1922 was a great day in the history of Torah in America, because Rabbi Shlomo Palachek came to America not to raise funds, not to give drashot, but to teach the highest class at Yeshivat Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan. And this was epic making, and as I said to you last week, it had a domino effect, because if YU, what we call today Yeshiva University, can bring the Meitzita, then ultimately Torah V'Das wanted a big Rosh Yeshiva. They brought Reb David Leibovich afterwards. As usual, there was a little machlokes. Our Jews can't get along too long in B'Shalom B'Shalva. So Reb David Leibovich left to organize Chafetz Chaim, and they brought in Reb Shlomo Hyman. And you had in America before World War II, whenever I come to Borough Park, I'm accosted by many of my students there who listen via the website. So last year, they gathered around me, and these are intelligent people, Borough Park Jews, good Jews, learned Jews. And they wanted to know who deserves the credit after World War II for building Torah in America. And I told them, why are you telling me after World War II? There was a whole basis in America before World War II. And people don't realize that. Yes, there's no question that when the refugees came in, the displaced persons, the people running away from Hitler, there was a tremendous recreation or a tremendous intensification of all that we had in America. But to begin with, you have to give credit. Rabbi Ruderman, the fallout from New Haven to Cleveland to Baltimore, but Rabbi Revel was the first, bringing the Meitzita. Now, the Meitzita was a very interesting individual, as you saw, and he had a very warm sense of humor. He recognized, as he told the Mirror Sheshiva, I couldn't remain in Europe because of my hashkafas. And that was the Meitzita. He was very open to general education. He was a Mizrahiite. He believed in Eretz Yisrael, settling it, going in Aliyah. And the Meitzita, despite the tragedy of his early death, he was zeicha that very few Gedolei Yisrael was zeicha to in the 20th century, that he left children and grandchildren and later great-grandchildren. And in the state of Israel today, you probably have tens and tens, if not over 100, of his direct descendants. Over 100 for sure. Many little kids running around with the name Shlomo Palachek in memory of their great-grandfather, their great-grandfather, V'ken yirbu v'ken tirbena. On a personal level, it was fascinating that when I got involved, you know, you don't want to publish till you get your doctorate. If you publish before you get your doctorate, you may, Josh, you may offend some of your professors. I don't know why there's the halacha v'lo yavar, but you're always advised, at least in the field that I was in, don't publish till you get your doctorate, because if you publish before your doctorate, they're going to find fault with what you published, and they can shoot you down when your doctorate comes up for an oral defense. But after I got my doctorate, I got involved in research in Gedolei Yisrael, and I did a nice piece on the Meitzei Tehili, which appeared in Jewish Life. Now, Jewish Life, none of you know what Jewish Life was. It was the official publication of the Orthodox Union, and it was, at that time, there was no tradition yet. You have to understand, Jewish Life played a very big role when it came out. Later, tradition in Jewish Life were together. Jewish Life was not a scholarly tradition, perhaps more popular, but the Jewish Life played a very big role. Today, its predecessor, its grandchild, is Jewish Action, which is also a fascinating publication. But I published on the matrix of Jewish Life, and you know, the family got in touch with me. They were very thankful. Suddenly, someone remembered the Meitzei Tehili. And in 1968, and you read about this in Washington, until 1968, who could dream of ever seeing Eretz Yisrael? I was a Rebbe in YU. I got $4,200 a year for giving a shiur. And I was a Rav of building a new kehillah, which I got $4,000 a year, $2,000 from the kehillah and $2,000 from YU, a startup grant. And who had money to visit Israel? But Mr. Gross, Zichrono Levracha, doubled our salaries. That's the year he gave the yeshiva. First time that YU got $1 million. Today, they're going to announce soon, they just got a gift for Albert Einstein Medical School, over $150 million. I think I told you, they sold the property, and the people on the board of trustees told me they're going to be left with over $150 million. But in 1968, to get $1 million from Joe Gris, and he put a pin in it, only for the Rosh Yeshiva salaries, because the Rebbetzin Soloveitchik, told him on her deathbed, Rebbetzin Tanya, the Rosh Yeshiva are underpaid. And Mr. Gris said, Rebbetzin, was kan ich tun, ich freye zemach, and to make you happy, what can I do to make you happy? And she said, the Rosh Yeshiva, I mean, it's an unbelievable story. If I wouldn't be a living witness, then I wouldn't have published that letter in Washington from Mr. Gris, from YU to me and all the other Rebbeim, I wouldn't believe it anymore. It's an unbelievable story. So my salary doubled overnight, and I took my wife and my two elder daughters. My youngest daughter stayed with her grandparents in the Bronx, and we visited Israel for the first time, and we vowed that we would settle here within a year. We were zeichet to fulfill our vow within 10.5 months to come back, Olim Hadashim. But while we were here, they were dedicating a street in Kiryat Moshe, and they got in touch with me. We were staying with the RCA, Rabbinical Council, at the King's Hotel, and I was invited to the dedication. What's the name of the street? Right next to Merkaz HaRav, Rehov HaIlui. Who is the street named for? The Ilui of Meitzei, the Meitzei Ilui. So next time you're on that street, it's about a block long, that's all. It's Rehov Meiri. The Meiri turns into Rehov HaIlui. I don't know if it's more than a block long, but if you look at the sign, you'll see Rehov HaIlui, Al Shem HaIlui, B'Meitzei, Reb Shlomo Palachek with his years. All right, now, as we said last week, and we're picking up now, the Meitzei died of an infection of the gum, osteomyelitis of the gum. Your father treats an infection like that with a shot with antibiotic pills. In my days, they gave you a shot in your gum with penicillin, and that was the end of the infection. The Mechita, 1928, had the infection went to his brain, and the Mechita died. When a person is happily married, many times people come to me to speak with their children. Why? I can mention names, it's not important. People want to remarry. And children are opposed. They feel it's a disgrace for our mother's memory if you want to remarry. I had a case like that with Gedolei Yisrael. So they came to me to speak to the children. Why did they come to me? Because my mother remarried very happily. So I explained to the children that if your father had a happy marriage, it's the greatest credit to your mother's memory that he wants to have a happy marriage again. He's not afraid of marriage. There's some guys, I told you, in 1977, the Rav mourned his wife, and I'll never forget what happened afterwards when all the Rav Yeruchim Yerelik, I think, he's still crying 10 years later, and one wise guy rabbi started dancing around. If my Macha Shefer goes, he's going to, I don't want to quote his words, he's going to dance on her. You can fill in the word. No, he's not going to remarry. You can imagine what type of marriage he had. But when you have a happy marriage, there's a void perhaps that you want to fill. Okay. The yeshiva was left without the mechita. The students now were used to having a first-rate Talmud Chacham. The mechita is gone. Who do we get? And here, Reb Baruch Be'er was visiting America. Reb Baruch Leibovitz, Reb Baruch Be'er, the Kamenetz of Rosh Yeshiva, Talmud Muvhak, of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, and Reb Baruch Be'er had tremendous derech eretz for the Soloveitchik family. Even he writes, those of you familiar with his writings, with the Birchat Shmuel, you know every time he mentions his Rebbe, you can feel the Yirat HaKavod in his pen, how many titles he gives his Rebbe. And he told Rabbi Revel that Reb Moshe Soloveitchik is interested in leaving Europe. The son of Reb Chaim. Reb Moshe Soloveitchik is interested in leaving Europe. Revel danced for joy. He's going to bring Reb Moshe to America. He's going to bring Reb Chaim's son. And then the problems began with anti-Semitism, which Daniel, it's hard to understand the hatred of the world for the Jewish people. And I have to tell you, in my humble opinion, the stupidity of our government, I wish Netanyahu would read from the Bible when he appears at the UN, when he appears in America. Read the Bible. Let them declare they hate the Bible, they hate the Old Testament. All right, then they fine, you want to hate the Old Testament, you hate God, then all right, you hate the Jews. But the hatred for us, no, it's nothing new. That hatred existed, and the consul, the American consul in Warsaw, or the American ambassador, whoever had to deal with giving Reb Moshe a visa, would not give it to him because he had an ingrown toenail operation. And once you have an operation, you're a liability until you recover, until you're perfect again. Why should America take in someone who has an illness? They'll have to hospitalize him, and he could not get out of Europe. Now, at that time, Reb Shimon Shkup was in America. Reb Shimon Shkup was one of the greatest Rosh Yeshiva in Europe. Grodno Rosh Yeshiva. Some of you knew his Talmidim. It's not ancient history. Rav Winterman was a Talmud of Reb Shimon Shkup, the chief rabbi of Israel. Reb David Lifshitz, the Tzuvalka Rav Rosh Yeshiva, NYU, was the Talmud of Reb Shimon Shkup. He was a fabulous individual. And he was in America to raise funds. Why? The yeshivas were suffering. Grodno, and let me give you a little bit of a background, and here I'll give you a source. I'm quoting from Rakafot Aharon, Chelik Aleph, beginning on page 7. Who was Reb Shimon Shkup? He was born in a little hamlet right near Mir. He studied in the Mir Yeshiva. Mir then was not the Mir that it becomes in the 20th century. Let me give you his years before we go any further. Put him into context. 1860-1939. Shevach, what does it tell you? He was born when the Civil War was first beginning. Put him into context. He then goes to Volozhin after Mir. Volozhin was like Harvard. Volozhin was the Yale and Harvard of the yeshivat. He was a Talmud Mufak of the Netziv. He was very close to Reb Chaim. He developed an analytical approach to learning. Reb Shimon Shkup's approach later plays a big role in the TELS approach. Those of you that have learned in TELS, they can take a Gemara and they will analyze it and they will take the sujit that are similar to it or that complemented in Shas, supplemented, and they will work out the entire marechet. That's the word they use. They'll take a topic, for instance, you take kinyanim, how you gain something, how you acquire something. Reb Shimon could lecture for months on the topic of kinyanim. Take every Gemara, analyze it, how it works, what it does, how you gain, what is a kinyan, how does a Jew acquire, how does a Gentile acquire. This was Reb Shimon. He was a fabulous teacher. Also, a very broad person. I yet knew people who knew Reb Shimon. And nowadays, you understand, the youth is the Litvisha world. I don't recognize the Litvisha world. One Rosh Yeshiva is more narrow-minded than the other. I don't have to go into politics of what goes on today in Israel, but suffice it to say, Rav Shmuel Orbach, I quoted him what he said Saturday night. So, you know, young people hear this, it leaves a terrible impression with them that these are Rashi Yeshiva, these are Gedolei Yisrael, this is the way they speak. Today, narrow-mindedness wins out. The chumrah of the weak, the more machmi you are, the firmer you are, the better you are, the more machmir you are in hashkafa, the more extreme you are. This was not the Volozhin, this was not the Netziv, this was not Reb Shimon Shkup. He was a very broad individual with an understanding of the big world beyond. But as a Rosh Yeshiva, he was fabulous. Now, following World War I, a lot of yeshiva boys were displaced, particularly with the upheaval of communism, because communism, slowly but surely, Russia became communistic. Then you had the big war, the Reds versus the Whites. White Russia, by 1921, falls under communism, and Grodno was like on the border, was close to White Russia, and yet it was already part of Poland. Reb Chaim Moza pleaded with Reb Shimon Shkup, organize a yeshiva there. He had taught for years in Telz, Reb Shimon. Then he became a rabbi of Molch, and then of Bryansk. And after World War I, they pleaded with him, organize the yeshiva in Grodno. Hundreds of yeshiva boys are stranded there. They need you. And the Grodno yeshiva, Sharei Torah, those of you from Kew Gardens Hill should recognize the name. There's a continuation of Shimon's great-grandchildren run the yeshiva in Queens, Sharei Torah. The Sharei Torah yeshiva in Grodno took off. And this was Reb Shimon's baby. 1920s, money, needs, budget, Poland, recession, everyone is running to America. You now have millions of Jews in America. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Jews of East European origins. Even if they're not religious, they still have a feeling for a yeshiva. Even if America has destroyed them, even if America has ruined them, even if America has corrupted them, even if America has turned them into Machalalei Shabbos, you all know what went on in America. And I got a shaila this week, an interesting question. Are you allowed to buy from a store that's open on Shabbos on a Wednesday? A very simple question. And we're talking in Israel. And my answer was absolutely not. No, halachically, what's wrong? You go into a store. But if we start supporting stores that are open on Shabbos, you have lower lane, you have shopping malls here. One store opens, a second store, a third store, they're losing business. By the time it's over, a Shomer Shabbos can't find a job in a certain mall because everyone is open Shabbos. And it actually happened. Those of you who recall what happened here in the early 70s, the Georgian Jews got out by the tens of thousands. In the early 70s, there are reasons why. I talk about it in Washington, the original letter that the Georgian Jews gave to Golda Meir. You have no idea the impact. This is the late 60s. They came out publicly, we want to leave Russia. Finally, they let out tens of thousands. They came to Israel. They weren't educated. Some of them worked in Lod Airport. And Golda Meir came to the airport, and a delegation comes to see her. They were never Mechalel Shabbos in Georgia, World War II, under the communists. And here in Israel, to keep a job, they have to work on Shabbos. To the credit of Golda, she gave an order that anyone who shomer Shabbos cannot be fired because they don't come in for Shabbos. The airport has to arrange it that they do not have to work on Shabbos. But when we support Chilul Shabbos, this is like America. What do they tell you in America? If you don't come in Saturday, don't come in on Monday. And we all know the memoir literature, how many tens of thousands of Jews succumbed lower lane, Chaim Soloveitchik's Rupture and Reconstruction, his famous article. But and this is why I said I'm opposed. We'll have in Israel like America. If you don't want to work Saturday, we can't hire you in this shopping mall. Kol hakavod to Azrieli that in all his malls, by constitution or whatever technical word, legal word you have to use, by charter, his malls have to be Shomer Shabbos and the eateries have to be under Hashgacha. Kol hakavod to David Azrieli, should live and be well. Now, Reb Shimon came to America, he's raising funds. What he do with the yeshiva in Grodno, and this is very important, I'm going to show you sources, because here I'm going to differ with Reb Nosson Kamenetsky and differ with Gadol. What he do with the yeshiva in Grodno? He left it in the hands of his son, Reb Moshe Mordechai Epstein, Reb Moshe Mordechai Shkop, and his son-in-law, Reb Hindel Fivus. The son-in-law was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and his son and son-in-law were in charge of the yeshiva. Reb Shimon is now in America, and Rabbi Revel knew Reb Shimon. How did Rabbi Revel know Reb Shimon? Because if you recall, I told you Rabbi Revel was autodidactic. What does autodidactic mean? He never studied in a yeshiva. His father was a big rev. He lived in Kovna. He hung around the Batei Medrash. In Kovna. Kovna had Rabbanim Gedolei Torah. You became a Talmud Chacham by just sitting and learning. But one semester, Rabbi Revel studied in Telz. And this is why Rabbi Revel had a certain affinity for Telz. The only yeshiva he ever studied in was Telz. Number one, that tells you he knew Reb Shimon Shkop. Reb Shimon Shkop might have very well been his Rebbe while he was in Telz. But you couldn't be in Telz without knowing Reb Shimon. That will also explain to you why on the YU faculty in the late 30s, Rabbi Revel saved the lives of two young Telz Talmidim, and they became Rosh Yeshiva in YU, brought them to America. One of them was Reb Lezer Volk, went to Baltimore first, and from Baltimore, once there was an opening for a Rebbe at what today is YU, he brought Reb Lezer Volk to YU, and Reb Yosef Lev Arnes. Those were the two tells you NYU. In parentheses, I can tell you the greatest part of my education, Moshe, was watching the constant battle, machloket, between the Rosh Yeshiva. It was fabulous. The Mira, the Briska, the Slabotka, the Telza, and Nebuch. There was one Ungarische, one Hungarian, Rabbi Gerstenfeld, Shem Yerachem, what went on between them. You should know, I don't know if Rabbi Riskin will admit it in public, but you can check with him. One Rebbe once wanted to hire him to spy on another Rebbe, that he should know what the other Rebbe is saying about him in public. And who can ever forget? Gentlemen, you had Purim, you had a Purim Rebbe, right? A big thing in Noam. Who can ever forget the Purim when they had Gramen? You know what the word Gramen, did they use that in Israel? They make up these ditties, the songs on Purim. And I was in the audience as a little kid, and there they were singing, Old Rav Volk is a shtickel bulk, la 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 la, Old Rabbi Volk is, he was a heavy guy, they called him a bulk. Bulk means weight. He didn't know what the word meant. He didn't know English that well. So he meets Rav Yeruchim Gerelik, the Mir, the Briska. He meets the Telza in the hallway, and this is a true, I wish I could tell you the story wasn't true, but I don't tell lies in Jerusalem when my grandsons are sitting in the class. And he meets Rav Gerelik, and he says, and Rav Yeruchim takes out his knife and says, Mushmul, Vasakti, Vasminzaktai, what do you say what they just said about you? Vasanzegizak, what did they say? Ashtikul bulk, you're a bulk. What is a bulk? Rabbi Volk asked him. A shtickel flesh mitzvei egen, a piece of meat with two eyes. That's what the heck they called you. Do you know what happened to us? You don't even know. We come into shiur, we're innocent kids, 3-4 days after Purim, big deal, you're back to learning. Rabbi Volk walks in, 1 o'clock, sits down, opens the Gemara, next to Mol Bet Ashtikel Bolt mit zwei Egen zu sagen this year. Ich wet nicht, das vermacht die Gemara. Out. Next time ask a piece of meat with two eyes to say this year. I will not. Close the door. 1 second later, there's the cool Randy Yeshiva, who we're all afraid of, Mr. Abrams, Norman B. Abrams, opens the door, walks in. You're all suspended indefinitely for 2 days, getting a letter from your mother, your father, of one of your parents. And we were sitting there, we couldn't believe what happened to us. What the heck? It's Purim. It's like, oh, that shtickle bulk. Then we found out that Yeruchim Gerelik, it was fabulous, the rebellion, the enmity, the hatred, the real world. And for yours truly, it did wonders, because if you go through my 7 books, you'll see that the theme that I always come back to is Lithuania, the different yeshivas. Where were they different? Not that I always was curious. Why are they different? Why do they put each other down? Why do they have superiority complexes? Why do they trace that Ungarische, the Ungarische Hund? I don't want to translate it. Gentlemen, Reb Shimon was in America. Why he was desperate. Rabbi Revel knew him. He had Talmidim in America. They negotiated, and Rabbi Revel signed the contract. I have a copy of the contract in my possession. $10,000 for Reb Shimon. What was the money for? $10,000. 1928 money. If you think for a minute, I told you that I was making $8,000 in 1962. 63, 64, if that much. But the money was for Grotner. Take what you need to live in America. So let's say he needed $2,000. The other $8,000 went to Grotner. And Rav Shimon agreed to become the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivas Rav Yitzchak Elchanan. He was a tremendous success. the boys revered him. The students responded with awe. Rabbi Revel issued a press release. The coming of the Gaon, Rabbi Shimon Shkup, to the yeshiva is not only a matter of importance for the yeshiva, but it is an important event for all American Jewry. He will, with the help of God, aid in planting the seeds of Torah in this land, just as he propagated the study of Torah in our old home. The students of the yeshiva, Yeshivas Reb Yitzchok Chanan, this is where you're sitting now, is a branch of Yeshivas Reb Yitzchok Chanan, but you probably know it as Yeshiva University. You follow me? But this is Yeshivas Reb Yitzchok Chanan. This is the Smicha program, part of the Smicha program. The students, Heidenu, quote from Bernard Revel, page 120, their description. Reb Shimon is walking slowly. An electric current seems to pass through those assembled. And all eyes focus upon Reb Shimon. One thought seems to be uppermost in everyone's mind. This elderly man, who possesses keen eyes that move quickly, and a gentle smile on a delicate face that is surrounded by a clean white beard, is Reb Shimon. This is the same Reb Shimon that tells Malch, Briansk, and Grodno, whose deeds and accomplishments in each of these stations in his life have gained for him the respect and love of all. And Reb Shimon was beloved. He was there for a year. He wanted to stay. I'll come back to this in great detail in a few minutes. He wanted to stay. But they needed him in Gretna. And Reb Shimon, at the end of the year, had to go back. He remained with Gretna, later celebrated 50 years of teaching Torah. To help the Gretna yeshiva, they issued a jubilee book. In the mid-30s, I have a Xerox copy of it. Sefer HaYovel L'chvod Reb Shimon Shkup. It's very fascinating because it shows you our own inner conflicts. Reb Elchanan Wasserman refused to participate in the book. He said, who ever heard of issuing a Sefer HaYovel? What is he? In our language, a movie star? A politician? Chadash Asur Min HaTorah. Refused to participate. Reb Elchanan Wasserman. But the Chafetz Chaim, everyone, Reb Chaim Reiser, don't know if the Chafetz Chaim was alive yet when the book, he was alive yet. This came out in 34, 35, but the Chafetz Chaim was the end of his life. Everyone wrote greetings, Divrei Torah, history, Reb Shimon. They loved him. And God spared him. 1939, Nazis conquering, coming in. He died of natural causes. 39, he died. Reb Baruch Baer died. Reb Chaim Meiser dies 1940. That entire generation of Gedolei Yisrael, except for Reb Elchanan Wasserman, who was killed by Hitler in 42, they all die right on the Ebbis, right on the brink of despair. Now, in America, and this remains a tremendous problem for the art scroll world until today. And I want to deal with it, and I want to state very, very clearly what I believe to be true, and prove it. One of the questions that I saw you asked Rabbi Weider, or whoever else you submitted those questions to, Rabbi Bednash, so you ask about the art scroll books. And again, this is a very delicate question that I referred to yesterday in a different context, if you recall my shiur of yesterday, dealing with the kids of Shulchan Aruch. Do you take a kid of 10, 11, introduce him to the kids of Shulchan Aruch, where he sees such a beautiful black and white world? Or are we sinning against the kid? We dealt with it yesterday. A kid has to know there's machlokes, there are different opinions, there are different poskim, there are different neidot. We have a very similar problem with Artscroll. Take a kid of 10 of 11, you're telling him about Gedolei Yisrael. You want the kid to be inspired. Well, every Gadol Yisrael had plenty of problems in modern times. No one was born with a kippah on their head. No one. Name any Gadol that you know from the 20th century. Mori Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik. What he went through in his life, the challenges, the questions, the quests. Pruzhana, Razain, Khaslovich, Warsaw, Berlin, Boston, New York, Rebaron Kotler. Come to Rebaron. Russia, communism, socialism, atheism. His sister, Moscow University. Hitler. America. Relationship with the Rav. The Lubavitcher Rebbe. Paris. Berlin, Paris. Crown Heights. His mother-in-law. Come on. No, what do you think? What do you think, Shevach? We take an 8-year-old kid, a 9-year-old kid, can we tell him the truth, the inner workings? That's a very delicate question. We want a kid to respect Gedolei Yisrael, but he has to understand they have quests, they have challenges, they have difficulties. They're no different than a kid that's growing up here today. I hope that these youngsters will become Gedolei Yisrael, but they also had challenges. It's a delicate question. Art Scroll has a tremendous problem because they recreate history. I have dealt with them, I've dealt with some of their people, I have been told by reliable people, history is not what happened, but what we want the children to believe what happened. Quote, end quote. And you all know how much has been written on this topic. I don't have to go further than Rabbi Dr. J.J. Schechter and one of his unbelievable articles in Torah Mada Journal years ago. All the quotes are in there. Now you have a real problem. The right-wing world, you see what's going on in Israel, the army. Shmad. God have mercy. Anyone who says that, you have to arrest them for desecration of airspace. An army that Shema Shabbos, Shema Kasher, B'Pekuda. Those of you who are in the army know what I'm talking about when I use the word B'Pekuda. An army that $100,000 spent on building a mikvah, the biggest Air Force base down south, you call Shmad. So you see, the right-wing world, Rakefet, the Latin vicious malicious cities, handy to the depraved, the grace, the service, the bad surreptitious, bum me out, every bad word in the world. It's the antithesis of everything they believe in. Rakefet. The Baal Lichtenstein. Take names. The Heschel Schechter is a hard pill for them to swallow. What, Rebaron and Reb Heschel? Who in the yeshiva world can learn as well as they can? Each one are right there. Each one has his own greatness, his own areas. It's a real problem. And the problems intensified because two fabulous pictures remain of Reb Shimon. Both of them taken in front of the building on Amsterdam Avenue and 186th Street. He was there when the beautiful, magnificent, Moorish temple-style building that takes up a full block was dedicated to Torah, to Yeshiva College, to what is today Yeshiva University in 1928. He was sitting in front of the building. He's there with the Gedolei Yisrael, with the Gedolei Harabbanim, with the Gedolei Rosh Yeshiva, with the crowd standing in front of the building on the day of dedication. Reb Shimon is there. Odd scroll, if they ever published that picture, they will remove it today. What you can do with a computer, you couldn't do 30 years ago. Today, a picture has no historic value because you can play with it. It's unbelievable what I have seen done with a computer. You can put your long-dead great-grandfather standing next to you, giving you a copy of From Washington Avenue to Washington Street. No big deal. Charlie, right along, I'm telling it as it is. There's Rav Shimon. Then there's a picture of the Smicha class of 28, where they're sitting in front of the building. And there's Rav Shimon right in the middle, and that rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, heinous, toothless, depraved, degenerate, debased, repetitious, fractified, publish these pictures in Revel. Can't deny it. And elsewhere as well. So you see, there's a real problem. And then the story begins. Why did Reb Shimon go back to Europe? And you read the right-wing literature, and they'll tell you he's very unhappy at YU. The students were up because of him. They didn't understand him. They didn't appreciate him. They didn't like him. He went back, redeeming his soul and running away from the up because of America. Gentlemen, this is absolutely, totally, and completely untrue. He was a very happy man in the United States. He loved Yeshivas of Yitzchok Chanan, the high school, the college. This was America. This was the 20th century. This was the civilization in which Torah had to thrive and succeed. He was overjoyed. Nevertheless, and I want to tell you, I researched this. I spoke with Rav Shmuel Belkin about this. Rabbi Belkin himself had learned in Grodno. Rabbi Belkin himself had been a Talmud of Rav Shimon. And the answer is very simple. The Grodno Yeshiva was falling apart without him. One of the real problems of the Litvishe Yeshiva world is that you cannot be a Rosh Yeshiva unless you marry the right girl. They are family institutions. Gentlemen, I can be the greatest Rebbe in the world. It doesn't mean my grandsons can teach the way I teach. Doesn't mean my grandsons will have the knowledge that I have in Shas and Paiskim. Halavai, they should have more, but they can have less. This is not a Hasidic world. Hasidic world is fabulous. Your father's a Rebbe, you're a Rebbe. All right. If you don't know, you're a shtickle Rebbe. You have gangsters for Hasidim if you're not doing that. All right. It's all possible. We like to believe that a Rebbe, B'Kedusha V'Tara, raises a son, B'Kedusha V'Tara. It not always happened that way. And those of you who know what's going on in Satna today and what's going on in Vishnus today, understand what I'm saying. Those of you that know what went on after the Kutzke died, understand what I'm saying. But that's a Rebbe. Chassidus can survive. You understand? But a Litvishe Welt, you need a Rebbe, a good Magid Shir, a big Talmud Chacham, a good Hezber, a Chiddush, a Chap. Grodno was falling apart. With all due respect to Rav Moshe Mordechai and Rav Feivel Hindus, it was not Rav Shimon and the Chafetz Chaim and Rav Chaim Moshe ordered him back. I'm quoting what I heard rumors, and Rabbi Belkin said to me, absolutely true. We don't have the letter. Halavai, we would have the letter. They said, Reb Shimon, if you don't come back, your yeshiva is falling apart. The $10,000 a year ain't a malavi, ain't a moded. And I can tell you from my research, I quote to you on page 120 from Bernard Revel, Reb Shimon was happy, but the Chafetz Chaim and Reb Chaim Moshe, you can't say no to them. You understand? Could you imagine if Rav Meisher and the Rav told me to do something? I don't want to sound like a chassid, but I would do exactly what they told me. And I have a copy of this letter in my possession. This is to Rabbi Revel, August 22nd, 1929. When I arrived here in Miami Beach, Reb Shimon writes, I was given your telegram in which you requested that I continue in the yeshiva. It surprises me that you still ask that I do so. Haven't I already told you many times that I cannot fulfill this request? It is my fondest wish that God should help me return to my yeshiva in Grodno before Rosh Hashanah. May the good Lord aid you in selecting the proper person to head the yeshiva. Nu, what does that letter sound like? Reb Shimon was desperate. He had to get back to America, to Grodno. He was desperate to salvage what was happening in Grodno. But to say he was unhappy with the yeshiva, New York, why you? Chas v'chalila. And that is the truth. And now let me go one step further. Gentlemen, which book, volumes, were burned in public on the streets of Matostoff during this last decade? It reached the New York Times. I never saw one word in the New York Times about Aaron Rakefet, even when he should have been in the New York Times. The video on the Rev's life, one man's achievement against all odds. My name wasn't even mentioned. I know why. Rakefet's in Israel. Who gives a hoot about him? He can't help. Those that live in America can help. That's life. But when your books are burned on the streets of Matostoff, the New York Times does a major article. If you recall, a full-page New York Times picture of Reb Nesson Kamenetsky. The name of the book, gentlemen, Making of a Gadol, Reb Nesson Kamenetsky. Now, I have to tell you, if you haven't studied the thousands of pages of Making of a Gadol, the footnotes, the excursuses, you have not lived. It is fabulous. But there is a lot of material in there, and it's all documented. But like everything else, each one brings his own vantage point. When it comes to Reb Shimon, Reb Nesson is incorrect. Page 1101 and the following pages. And Reb Nesson Kamenetsky describes Reb Shimon at the yeshiva and why Reb Shimon would dare to come to America. Why would he come? Why would he teach? Why would he agree? Why did he have a havia mina to stay? And he brings down some very fascinating sources here that the Gedolim in Europe recognized America was the future. The Chafetz Chaim encouraged Talmidei Chachamim at times, go to America and change the world. Rav Chaim Brisker encouraged Talmidei Chachamim. And there is a tradition, new, you tell me, the Volozhin tradition, that Rav Chaim Volozhiner, the Netziv, Rav Chaim Volozhiner cried, and he said, Mashiach will not come until Torah will thrive in America. And he broke down and cried. And in his time already, Jews were starting to go to America. Jews were starting to talk of America. America was as distant from Europe as we've envisioned Mars from us today. distant physically and distant spiritually, but they recognize Jews are going. Torah has to thrive in America. He quotes Rabbi Bera Wein. Rabbi Bera Wein saying that his father, who came to America in the 1920s, Reb Zev Wein, wound up in Chicago, well-known Rav in Chicago. Reb Bera Wein is Rabbi Wein of Shari Chesed. There's a big shul, Beit Knesset Hanasi, Rabbi Wein of Muncie, Rabbi Wein, well-known Rabbi Bera Wein, the historian, movie producer, promoter, fabulous individual. Rabbi Bera Wein quotes his father, who said when Reb Shimon came to America, Reb Shimon told him, Europa, Europe is ausgespielt. How do you translate that? It's played out, ausgespielt. There's no future in Europe. So Reb Shimon came. Reb Shimon was happy. But on page 1102, Reb Nosson Kamenetsky gives a whole description of Reb Shimon and his relations with Rabbi Revel, that Rabbi Revel learned in Perls, and Reb Shimon kicked him out, and Rabbi Revel now was taking revenge. He was letting Reb Shimon know that he was the boss, that he ran the yeshiva, and that Rabbi Revel, he brings a whole story here with the Mechita, that the Mechita finished shir 5 minutes early, and Rabbi Revel said to him, "This is nochta 5 minutes." He met him in the hallway. There's still 5 minutes. And the Mechita answered, "The chab gezakt mein chiddush. I said my chiddush. I don't have what to wear to it today, gentlemen. I want to tell you this is. It could very well be that Rabbi Revel said to the Mechita that we run with the schedule here. And look, we finish at Tuchveis 3 o'clock, whatever the schedule is." It's not a European yeshiva in that sense. We have to run with a schedule. Could very well be. But to say that there was animosity, Rabbi Revel revered, adored the Mechita, Reb Shimon, you see from the correspondence what the relationship was, and Chas v'Chalila even to imply that there were problems between them. And I stand on it, and if anyone knows Rabbi Kamenetsky, you can repeat my shir to him, repeat my sources to him. I stand on the concept that Reb Shimon went back to Europe not out of sinat haman, but out of ahavat Mordechai. Plain and simple. Gentlemen, we have arrived. With Reb Shimon's going back to Europe, Rabbi Revel became desperate. Who will take his place? Who will come here? Who will change America? And again, he kept on corresponding with Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, and in the Rebel archives, we found drafts of some of these letters to Reb Moshe. And you should see the Derech Eretz, and you should see the way they're written, and you should see the way Rabbi Revel tells Reb Moshe how Reb Shimon had to leave, had to go back, and that the yeshiva is bereft, the yeshiva is orphaned, do everything you can, and Rabbi Revel had Dean Zar contact the American immigrant officials and the State Department, and finally they achieved the dream. Reb Moshe Soloveitchik comes to the United States. Who was Reb Moshe Soloveitchik? I quote to you now from the Rav, volume 1, beginning on page 8. Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, his years, 1879-1941, so that he was considerably younger than Reb Shimon Shkop, 19 years younger. Born in Voloshin, grew up on his father's lap. Now, those of you that have the Rav The World of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, written by my good friend A.R.R. I want to call to your attention, I may have a mistake in the book. It's the only mistake, or it may be it's a fielder's choice. It's on page 9. And I'll tell you what's written. I'll tell you the way I will rewrite it, if there'll ever be a second edition, not just the, it's now in its fourth printing, but there's not a second edition. If you know what I'm talking about, you can understand. Publishers are cheap. And if they don't have to put out a new edition, they save a fortune of money. Just do an offset and they're finished. Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik called this to my attention. If Reb Moshe was born in 1879, when was his bar mitzvah? 1892. So in the original edition I have, the young Moshe did not get to celebrate his bar mitzvah at the yeshiva before it was closed by the Tsarist authorities in early 1892. The Lashon was closed by the Tsarist authorities in 1892. I've given many lectures on this. The truth of the matter is that the yeshiva was officially closed about 10 days after Reb Moshe's bar mitzvah. But there were very few students there already. There were edicts that had been issued. Every student has to leave. So it's a delicate question. Am I correct or am I not correct? The yeshiva was not really the yeshiva, but technically it was still open. So I rewrote the sentence. The young Moshe did not yet get to celebrate his bar mitzvah at the yeshiva before it was closed by the Tsarist authorities in early 1892. In other words, he technically celebrated his bar mitzvah in the building, in the yeshiva building, although it was shortly going to be closed, and in reality, the students basically, instead of hundreds there, there were just a handful that were left at that moment. Okay. Reb Moshe marries the daughter Revelia Feinstein, Revelia Pruzhana, the Pruzhana Rav. He marries Pesya. All of you know about the memoir literature by Reb Moshe's daughter Shulamit Meiselman. Many members of the family are not happy with it. Many members praise it. She reveals family secrets. I can tell you I'm a very happy person that she wrote what she wrote, because then you can lecture and you can quote Reb Moshe's daughter. There is no question that in marrying Pesha Feinstein, he married a very great, independent thinking woman. This woman was an Isha Gedolah, Talmidah Chachama, with a very broad, open hashkafa. Reb Moshe was coming from the cloistered world of Brisk and Volozhin, and he marries a woman who's conversant with all of Russian magnificent literature, a woman who knows modern Hebrew, a woman who becomes a tremendous religious Zionist. And all this with no compromise at the basic gestalt of Yirat Shemayim, a woman who could sit and say Tehillim with the greatest kavana imaginable, and the stories are legendary with the Rav sitting in another room talking and learning, and they're stuck on a Tosfot, and Rebbetzin Pesha from the kitchen yells out the Pshat and Tosfot for the Gedolei Yisrael who is sitting in the room next door. Now, he has kest. What is kest? Those days there was no kollel. Father-in-law agreed to support them for, I believe it was 10 years. As the 10 years come to a close, it's time to go out in the world. Reb Moshe becomes Rav in Rusain, which was a very important rabbinate. He succeeds the previous rabbi, Reb Alexander Moshe Lapidus, as they pronounced it then, who had just died, was an Adam Gadol, a tremendous speaker, a great religious Zionist, the precursor of the Mizrahi movement, a Talmud of the Musa movement. This was the famous Lapid that you can read about him in the Tanuach HaMusa. Reb Moshe falls flat on his face in his first position. It's very difficult to succeed a very famous rabbi. You're young, there was opposition, who's Reb Moshe? The story is a legendary. When he applied for the position, Balabatim came from Brisk and told the Balabatim in the Rishain, Reb Moshe can fence for an Elish for a Rambam. Any difficult Rambam you have, Reb Moshe can give you an answer, can explain it. And the Balabatim in Rishain, who are Balabatim, responded, to fence for the Rambam can sitzen beim Katten Stopp in Brisk. To give answers to difficult Rambams, he can remain with his father in his father's house in Brisk. We don't need him. He had a lot of difficulty. There was a sheikh there. The Rav always told the story with the Esrog, with the Shiloh, with the hybrid. I don't. I believe I quoted in the Rav, the World of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. So he had a difficult time. Was there about 3 years. And then he went to Chaslovich. Went to Chaslovich, that became the rabbinate that dominates Reb Moshe's life, that was his rabbinate, that these were the years in which the Rev grew up. Chaslovich had a tremendous influence on both of them. Had he come to Chaslovich? Because his brother-in-law, Reb Menachem Karakovsky, who was married to another daughter, to Badana, he was married to Pesha's older sister, Badana, a daughter of Rebellia Feinstein, by the way, Rebellia Feinstein's wife was a cousin to Reb Moshe Feinstein's wife. She followed the name Feinstein, they're distant cousins, but their connection is much closer through their mothers. And the Rebbetzin Pesha and Reb Moshe Feinstein were first cousins. The Rev was a first cousin once removed from Reb Moshe Feinstein. So who was Rav in Chaslovich? Rav Menachem Karakovsky. He now became the Magid Meisharim of Vilna, member of the Vilna Beis Din. So he brought his brother-in-law into Chaslovich. When Rav Moshe came into Chaslovich, he already was more mature, and it was a Hasidish town. I want to tell you, on the websites, I see morons criticizing the Rav and what kind of Chabad, and Chabad wasn't there. The website, I don't know, I'm using a computer now 4 or 5 years. I was taught in this room by my Talmud, David Katz, my Rebbe in a computer, said it's a disgrace for me not to use a computer. Right? My mother learned over 70, I learned I was over 70. I've yet to see a drop of pornography on the computer. I have to tell you, 5 years, or is that pornography? I don't know, I've never seen a drop. I guess it's there, but I don't ask for it, I don't see it. But what I do see on the websites, I'm ratzut, arrogance, Rechilut, Lashon Hara, stupidity. So that guy who attacked me when I remember I called the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, I called him the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and he went like, that doesn't know a thing, why you just know a thing? Then he went after the Rav with Chaslovich. Rebbe Shalom, if the Rav told the story, Rabbanan told the story, Shalom Bet Meisman told the story, everyone tells the same story. You mean to tell me you shtick nothing, that you come along 100 years later and you know more than all the Soloveitchiks? I want to protest and I want to make it clear. I believe my Rebbe 100%, but more than that, I have a proof. If you're a Chabadnik, you'll know there's a beautiful song from Lubavitch to Chaslovich, where they sing with a chariot going back and no, if Chaslovich is in the song, what does it tell you? It tells you that Chaslovich was a hotbed of Lubavitcher Chassidim. Now, it must be said that Reb Chaim, and again, I have difficulty understanding it, but I have to tell the truth. The Vilna Gaon was totally opposed to Chassidim. He thought they were up because him. No? His Talmud, his Reb Yitzchak Voloshin, Reb Chaim Voloshin, his Talmud Mufak Reb Chaim, not so opposed. Intellectually wrote Nefesh Chaim, took a few potshots. I quoted in some of my scholarship in Reb Chaim Voloshin, it's in Rakaf and Aram, all right. Don't have time now to go into it, but you know what I'm talking about, how by the Hasidim they walk in and they say, Shen Zeit zu davening Mincha, Nema Kutz ist der Stern in Himmel. Is it time to daven Mincha? Take a look if there are stars in the heavens. All right, he took a potshot at the Hasidim. I understand that. But Reb Chaim Briska, the Vilna Gaon, Reb Chaim Voloshin's great, great, great grandson. The Rav said he was like a Hasid. He was Kamada Hasid. They're all types, the Velvel, they're all types of stories, he said. So you see in Haslovich already, it opened the Rav, it opened Reb Moshe. And this can explain to you later why Reb Moshe's best friend, when he taught at what you call Yeshiva University, was a Gera Chassid, Rav Avraham Yitzchak Zalmanovich. So Gera Chassid, he was involved in freeing the Gera Rebbe. He was the Mashkiach in the Yeshiva. It was Achsidish Yid. You'd think Reb Moshe Weinberger coming in, assuming he'll come in, because I hear there's so much opposition, you got to be crazy to go into a sick bed. But I spoke about it yesterday. It's not for now. But he's not the first Chassidish Mashkiach in the Yeshiva. And who was Reb Moshe's best friend? Rakefet describes them from eyewitnesses walking up and down the hallway, talking and learning, talking Chassidus, talking Machshava, talking in politics. They were best friends. So you see, this is Reb Moshe. Now, following World War I, and the truth is that there is some research done, and we have come up, and others have come up, it seems he was offered a position in America years before. Reb Moshe, to go to America, chas v'chalila, zeh ein alen goyim. Reb Zimpesha was in favor, but she couldn't win at that time. But what happened was, after World War I, the communists take over White Russia, Chaslovich, that was a city where 95% no one was mechallel Shabbos. The Reb said about Chaslovich, the only two people who were mechallel Shabbos was the doctor and the druggist. Jewish doctor and the Jewish druggist. They were Mechallel Shabbos as a doctor, and he was not a doctor, he was not a druggist. They knew nothing. But by the standards of that time, he was a doctor and he was a druggist. No one else was Mechallel Shabbos. When the communists took over, within a few months, the only one who was Shomer Shabbos were old Jews with long beards. Every last kid became a Mechallel Shabbos, became a communist. Became the dream, socialism, anarchism, communism, changed the world. Tikkun Olam, Tikkun Olam. I believe in Tikkun Olam, but first, I've got to be Metakan myself. After myself, the Jewish people. Then we'll worry beyond. Believe me, I believe in Tikkun Olam. Metakan Olam b'malchut kadai. Gentlemen, Reb Moshe saves his life. Read Shulamit Meiselman's memoir, how they get to Warsaw, cross the border, smuggled across the border. All right, in Warsaw, he teaches. Where does he find a position? Tachkamoni. Tachkamoni, a Mizrahi institution. Could you imagine the son of Reb Chaim Briska, who was opposed to Zionism, opposed to Agudat Yisrael, opposed to any innovation. His eldest son is teaching in a Mizrahi institution. Wow. The heartache. The Rav writes about it. The Rav spoke about it. Chamesh Drashad, Yosef Ve'echav. The Rav speaks, if you read English, you read Hebrew, Chamesh Drashot. It's published in Yiddish, the original language which the Rav gave it in. The Rav describes the tremendous machloket between Yosef and his brothers and puts it into the terms of Mizrahi and Aguda and puts it into the terms without mentioning his father, but both Harav Heschel Shechter and little Rakefet, both will tell you he's describing his own father. When he describes Yosef, it's his father. And they're eisgetritten, they drove him out of the Beis HaMedrash.
Also, I think, autobiographical.
Say that maybe, but the heart of it is, he talks about early 1900s. It's not the Rav yet, it's his father. Say that could be autobiographical. I don't know if the whole question, did the Rav suffer from his isolation? I don't know. I don't think he suffered. I don't think so. I think he understood Shichmo lamala mikol ha'am. And you see what's happening in Israel. Do we suffer because they're calling us goyim? I don't suffer. I pity. It's unbelievable. You should see some of the websites. They show Rabbanim from the religious Zionist world. They said they look, they think Haredi, they dress Haredi, they are Haredi. Their only problem is they're Zionist. Over that, we're going to go to war. I'm talking about these right-wing websites, but at least with a little seichel. Rakefet, okay, you can say he's a Zionidat. He's Einem mit der Bord, mit der Bäckische, geht mit Bigday der Bonnem, was soll man sein gesund? Gentlemen, there was another problem in Warsaw. And here you come to a problem that haunts us. We alluded to it in the Sunday class. We dealt with it with manuscripts. It's the problem. I just got correspondence from Rav Shaul Lieberman again. It's the problem that constantly comes up. What's our approach? Is it traditional learning or is it scientific Jewish scholarship? And you all know Mizrahi institutions, you're going to find a lot more Chochmat Yisrael, Wissenschaft des Judentum. Scientific Jewish scholarship. You find it in Germany, in Hildesheim, where there were many Agudistim. But outside of Germany, religious Jews, basically Germany and Galicia, part of Hungary, Western Europe, you'll find Chochmat Yisrael in religious hands. But outside of that, there was traditional learning. Reb Moshe Soloveitchik locked horns with the Dean of Tachkamoni, Professor Maya Balaban. He had a Chochmat Yisrael approach, a scientific approach, and at times they clashed. Reb Moshe was now ready to leave Europe. His beloved son, Reb Yosef Dov, his heir apparent, had left home, was in Berlin. Reb Shmuel, his second son, is shortly going to go to Belgium, where he studies chemistry and gets a PhD. Reb Aaron is an infant yet. He's ready to go to America. And the aggravation is great. He can't get out. He can't get out. Finally, late 1929, Reb Moshe sails for the United States. His wife, the children that are still at home, the two girls and Reb Aaron, are left behind. He hires a Rebbe to teach Reb Aaron. Can anyone tell me his name? Rav Yitzchak Chutna. That's the relationship between Reb Aaron Soloveitchik, Rav Chutna. That's how Reb Aaron Soloveitchik winds up a Rebbe in Yeshivat Rabbeinu Chaim Berlin. It's from Chaim Berlin that he comes to YU. Because Rav Chutna was the Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Chutna was his Rebbe. He had tremendous derech eretz for Rav Chutna. It's not a simple matter, you see. Reb Aaron Lichtenstein studied in Chaim Berlin. Tremendous derech eretz for Rav Chutna. You know Rav Chutna? The Pachad Yitzchak. Rav Chutna, he was a Talmud of Rav Kook. Later years, he took Rav Kook's picture off the wall. That to me disturbs me, something indescribable. We have to love our Rebbeim. If we can disagree, we disagree. We have our own hashkafa, where we're reacting to a different world situation. But we have to love our Rebbeim. I told you, with David Hartman, what always troubled me was the enmity he had to Reb Aaron Kotler. And then the enmity to the Rav, what he wrote about in his last two volumes. Wow. To love our Rebbeim. Without our Rebbeim, where would we be? Platon Sofreihim. All right, that I differ with Reb Aaron Kotler, who am I to differ? Of course I differ. But do I love? I can't believe I gave a talk at YU. I still get feedback. Gee, a man gave a two-hour talk and didn't say one negative word about Reb Aaron Kotler. What's the Havi Amina? And I suppose you should know that Reb Aaron, I spoke with him, Hashkafa, I was a wise alec kid. I deserve a smack. I say to Reb Aaron, B'nai Akiva has many good ponen nish, das is nish demis hashkafa. That's what he answered me. But he listened. He listened. Why? Rabbi Zalman was 1,000 times closer to Bnei Akiva than Rabbi Aaron. And you see from his children and grand, Rabbi Yehuda Amital, grandson-in-law. Go on, many others in the family. But we have to love our Rabbeim. Wow. Rabbi Yitzchak Kutner. Rabbi Aaron's bar mitzvah takes place in Warsaw with his father already in New York. Could you imagine? Rabbi Aaron always spoke about it. And what was his bar mitzvah? He said he was called to the Torah, made a kiddush, had a schnapps, had a lechayim, had a shtickle herring. He said a devak Torah that Rav Kutner helped him prepare. That was his bar mitzvah. It's unbelievable. December 1929, the entire history of YU, Torah, the United States, the State of Israel, and this room starts to change. The catalyst begins. The Mechita is gone a year and a half. Reb Shimon is back in Grodno. And December of 29, Rabbi Rebbe walks in to the Beis Medrash, Amsterdam Avenue end, 185th, 186th Street. It's an entire block, the yeshiva. And introduces the new Rosh Yeshiva to give the first shiur, Reb Moshe Soloveitchik. I'm quoting, where am I quoting from? I'm quoting from the Rav, page 10, first volume. For the first year, the Beit HaMedrash was filled as feelings of expectancy and festivity were felt by all. Our master, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, began his lecture. Great was the surprise felt by all those present, since our master's lecture didn't seem like a beginning. It didn't appear as if this was the initial time he was speaking in our yeshiva. It rather seemed like a continuation, as if he had constantly lectured in the yeshiva. In truth, it was a continuation of the long road that the Torah has traveled from Sur and Pampadita in Babylonia through all the countries of our exile until it reached Volozhin. Now it is coming from Volozhin to New York. And I want to add one simple line. And it has come from New York to Jerusalem. Beautiful. This was Reb Moshe. He caught on. He mastered America. It's amazing. You want proof? Moshe, you want proof that he mastered America? It's the 1930s. He raises five children. All five remain from. Two of the boys become Gedolei Gedolei Yisrael. Show me one other Rebbe, one other Rav in America at that time that had the same achievement. All right, you can say the Rebbetzin played a big role, there's no question. I told you many times, they asked the Belia Henkin, they asked the Yisrael Henkin, how can it be you read Tanakh? Goinim, Tzadikim had children Rishayim, and kings who were Rishayim had children Tzadikim. And Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin said, we know who the fathers were. We don't know who the mothers were. He said, Goyne Shavar. Rav Henkin was a great Goyne. You know who Rav Henkin? You've heard of Nishmat for Women? The lady heading it is his granddaughter-in-law. Okay? Rebbetzin Chana Henkin is a granddaughter. She's married to Rav Yehuda Herzl Henkin, the grandson of Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. Golan Adia. Ask me, I have his volumes in the house. I can show them to you. But you see, Reb Moshe mastered America. He was there. He he already was at the yeshiva more than 10 years before he died very suddenly. But he was the yeshiva. This was Reb Moshe. This was the Soloveitchik name. This was Reb Chaim's son. I want to call to you my teacher, my dear friend, should live and be well in his 90s in good health, Rabbi Dr. Gilbert Klapperman, who did the doctorate before me on the early history of the yeshiva. And in the story of Yeshiva University, which was later published, and there were addendums added to it to bring it up to 1940, or in modern times, Rabbi Klapperman wrote, he was a Talmud of Reb Moshe. I'll tell you an interesting story. I want you to hear this story and understand it well. In Yiddish, there's a word, in the Musa, there's a word, only Rabbi Rubin will understand what I'm saying. Adaher, min daftabin agutu daher. Not just to repeat what I'm saying, but should go through your heart. So I'll tell you a story Rabbi Klapperman told us. He was a Talmud of Reb Moshe. He was getting smicha in the yeshiva. And he came home for Pesach. His father was a sheikh in the Midwest. And his father says to him, Gedalia, Gilbert, Gedalia. I'm saying it in English, but it was took place in Yiddish. I'm living it in Yiddish. Gedalia, I can't say it in English. Has du schon gedavent mincha? Did you daven mincha already? And he says to his father, Daddy, I'm getting smicha from Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, from Rabbi Revel. And you're worried that I shouldn't daven mincha? His father says to him, you're right, but I'm a father, and a father has to worry that his son should daven mincha. You're right, but I'm also right. It's a beautiful story. So Rabbi Gedalia Gilbert Klapperman later recalled, permission to become a regular member of Reb Moshe's class was the crowning glory of a student's many years of study and tacit certification that he was already a Talmud Chacham, an accomplished scholar. To weather Rabbi Moses Soloveitchik's exacting standards and then to earn his signature on the smicha was the highest accolade, that's like the highest achievement that could come to any student. And that's a beautiful description. That's Reb Moshe. That's the yeshiva. But it's more than that. Reb Moshe plays a very big role in saving the yeshiva during the Depression. What am I talking about? And never forget this. I'll have to conclude with this, but never forget it. Yeshiva was in terrible financial straits. There were no salaries paid. If you study Rothkopf's work on Rabbi Revel, there were strikes. College professors went out on strikes. The yeshiva faculty wanted to strike. Reb Moshe Assad wouldn't let them strike. And he gave many reasons. But one of the reasons he gave was very cute. And you have to think about this. He said, who are we fooling? The average student in the yeshiva doesn't need Reb Chaim's son to give a shiur. He just needs a good melamed. He says, if we go out and strike, they'll bring in youngsters who know how to teach, and they'll give a shiur. No one will know we're gone. I mean, that was one of the reasons he gave. Obviously, he held that you're not allowed to strike, not allowed to take a salary for teaching Torah. The whole salary is schar batalah. But Reb Moshe, it shows he had good earthly, down-to-earth knowledge. The average kid in yeshiva, right, in the kollel, I have to tell you that in this kollel, you have to be different. Now, Rebbe has to have something special. You can't just take a kid who's heard every Rebbe in the world and just teach up vetter and just explain words to him. And I can tell you in the history of the kollel, when you know that I'm here from day one, I'm sort of responsible for this kollel being here. So in the course of time, we had two teachers who didn't last. I don't want to mention names, obviously, but they didn't last. And I would ask the students why. He said, no. He said, you know, it's before Oxford. These guys said, just to explain words to us, we can do that ourselves. And I remember that answer. So that was Reb Meisha. Reb Meisha tragically died very suddenly in his 60s, 1941, January. Shulamit Meiselman attributes it to his heartache that they didn't want to appoint the Rav to become the president of the yeshiva. We'll talk about it in great detail. Rabbi Revel died December 2nd, 1940. They died like 6-7 weeks apart. And that was a terrible, terrible blow to the yeshiva. It was, to quote, that within a few weeks the yeshiva lost its father and its mother. Rabbi Revel was the father, the president, the Rosh Yeshiva. Rav Moshe Soloveitchik was the mother, was the Rebbe, was the focal Rebbe. And within a few weeks they were lost. It opened the Pandora's box. Who would become the next president? Who would become the next Rosh Yeshiva? And believe me, Rakefet has endless she'orim and material that's never been revealed before to give on it. But Dayal Tzara B'Shaita, we will come to it. Coming back to Rabbi Revel, look what he's achieved. A high school, a rabbinic program in America, producing rabbis who can speak the American idiom and have the American know-how. You're first starting to do this in Israel. Tzoha, right or wrong? Took 100 years in America. Take less here in Israel, because it's Avira Diara. But it has to take a good 60, 70 years. Brings Gedolei Rosh Yeshiva to America. Sam, don't you say one word. In England, 100 years ago, I was walking on the street. Did you hear people laughing? They said, we're going to send our kids to Volozhin. We're going to send our kids to Telz. We're going to send our kids to Mir. And someone said, I'm going to send my kid to America to Yeshiva. And they laughed at him. They stopped laughing. When the Meshitta came, the laughter was over. The Meshitta, Reb Shimon, and don't forget, Reb Shimon was happy. But Grodno is Grodno. And Reb Shimon could not say no to the Chafetz Chaim and to Reb Chaim Moshe Grzynski. Reb Moshe Soloveitchik. Wow. But that's not all. A very big achievement awaits us. The organization of Yeshiva College. The first and only college under the auspices of a yeshiva. This is not Bar Ilan. Bar Ilan is a university that gave birth to a kollel. Yeshiva College is the opposite. A yeshiva that gave birth to a college. Wow. The most interesting, fascinating lectures are yet to come. The story of what today is Yeshiva University. How it began, who made it possible. It's worthy of not just one movie, but a series, the story of what today is Yeshiva University. Wow. Gentlemen, what have we done today? Filled in Reb Shimon, filled in Reb Moshe. Next Monday, if Bibi Netanyahu will come to class, all his problems will be solved. And I sign on the dotted line. And that's the title of next Monday, of Monday's shiur. Sunday, can we paskin against the Shulchan Aruch? What you're in for next Sunday, Moshe, 36 grand to the IOU list to walk in and to rob oxygen from the Rebbe. Don't forget it. The press conference, I give back 36 grand, Pentagon coming. For giving me the reward of why I teach. Believe me, it's not salary. Richard Joel is not overly generous with Aaron Rakefet. It's okay, Rakefet has survived the vicissitudes of time. But to let off steam, this is life. Rakefet now is 25 years old. Wait, how old are you, Shmuel? How old? I'm 24. I'm younger than you. And boy, next week I am 18. And you gotta believe it. But I have a world to do. I just need time. And I have sources. I snished. Not cheap, Hashkafa. Bring Bibi. If you can get Lieberman, fabulous. Gentlemen, I want to show you something. Here, I want to show you something, what it's all about. I'm going to give it to you in a second, boys. Right? You read B'machaneh. You saw this B'machaneh. All right, you're in the army, you were in the army, you read B'machaneh. Did you see what's in here? Did you understand what's here? Here, B'machaneh, every week, they tell you, Zazim, people that are going to new posts. Here, look at this man. You know who that is? Aluf Mishneh Mordechai Kahana is now becoming the head of one of the Batei Sefer that trains the high-ranking officers in the infantry. Chel Raglim. Can anyone tell me who Mordechai Kahana is? That is Meir Kahana's nephew. It is Rav Nachman Kahana's son. And shows you no prejudice. Could you imagine Meir Kahana's nephew? You look around, what? He's a fanatic. His uncle. Moving on, he will soon be Bezrat Hashem, a Tat Aluf, a Brigadier General. Next, a wonderful article. Oni Chabad, I tell you, the older I get, if I could only be a chassid, I'd be a chabadnik. What can I tell you? Here, Chabad, one of their people, speaks about the internet. Rav Yosef Heller, the Rosh Kollel of Crown Heights. I couldn't have said it better, how he deals with the internet, how positive he is. What are we, morons? Waste millions of dollars calling on a sifa to answer the internet? Why don't we answer cars? 30 million people have been killed by cars. I want to ask a cause. Okay? What a fabulous article. Finally, I want to thank you fellas very much for the Purim Spiel you did on me. Like I put up these announcements, I was very moved the way you look at your Rebbe, and I'm very proud. Sunday, the Shia, Shas and Polskim rediscovered. If you want to be an Amoritz, the Shia is not for you. I could not have said it better. Monday, Rebbe beats down Yonah Lander, literally. Gentlemen, learn from what I did with Yonah Lander. I'll explain to you. There's so many lies in that book, but that he lies about why you, no big deal. Rakefet claims he has the facts wrong. Do they give a hoot? Why you... It's mutter to lie, mutter to beat them down. But you got to know how to grab. That thing with Jacob Schiff turning the president of Temple Emanuel into Reb Yankel Schiff over $1,000 that he gave in 1885, even for Satmar, that's a little bit too much. So you see, I knew what to say. Baruch Hashem. I want to thank you very much. If anyone wants a copy of the Purim Spiel, you're entitled to it. My dear students and Tui Mita. By the way, tonight is the book launch on B'Nativ Hadmama. And I have to tell you in advance, I'm buying 10 copies of the book. Those poor kids are going to have to read it. No excuses. Washington, they claim it's in English. It's hard to read. B'Nativ Hadmama is in modern Hebrew, not hard to read. It's also a very exciting night because we're going to have some of the key shlichim there of our people, or I should say shluchim is a good chabadnik, and they're going to be some of the real old-time refuseniks there that were world famous in the 70s and 80s and names that you have never heard unless you read Washington and paid attention to some of the funny-sounding names. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. Thank you, thank you.
Did anybody ever give a shiur of Rav Moshe Soloveitchik?
Not that I know of.
Not that I know either.
No, no one ever. But what can I tell you?
Go have nachas in the Einikoch.
Gentlemen, that's for you. The okay. Hey, Vantam? Comprehended? Where's the saxophone?
Not here.
No, these people would appreciate it. You have here Professor Tarragon, a rocket scientist. Don't play games. Dr. Hexter, the CEO of one of the biggest high-tech companies. His son is CEO of Ben and Jerry's. You guys have these Ben and Jerry's?
Okay, that's his son, the CEO.